to the Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Chicago. Hello again, Orion Samuelson, along with Max Armstrong and several other people who'll be joining us for our weekly get-together on the markets. And as we look at the activity on Wall Street this week, it was quite a week because yesterday, for the first time in the year 2016, the Dow ended in positive territory. We all remember the lower trade in the early part of the year. Well, it's taken this long to get the Dow back into positive territory. And then, not to be outdone, today the S&P 500 turned positive for 2016 as recession fears apparently are fading. But we probably should go back to Wednesday and the meeting of the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee, because their announcement that there could be two more rate increases in 2016 apparently encouraged a lot of investors, because in December, when the Fed raised rates for the first time in years, they indicated there could be four interest rates in the year 2016. But now the report on Wednesday scaled back expectations. One analyst said it was a huge gift to the market. I think the market was bracing for a more hawkish view. And following the Fed move, the dollar weakened. That drove up commodity prices. Oil prices, for example, hit the highest level in 2016. Interesting to look at that oil market, because since it hit its low back in January, it has moved higher by 55%. And one analyst said people are realizing this means a weaker dollar. That should benefit a lot of the stocks in the S&P and the Dow, stocks with lots of exposure overseas. And let's take a look at that oil market, because oil has also continued to move higher. And now traders are looking forward to a meeting on April 17th, because April 17th, some of the OPEC countries and non-OPEC countries have scheduled a meeting that could put a freeze on the amount of oil being pumped every day. Today, we saw the crude prices moving lower after the U.S. oil rig count rose for the first time since December. That renewed worries of a supply glut after an output freeze plan helped boost the market to the highs for 2016. But according to the industry firm Baker Hughes, U.S. energy firms this week added one oil rig after 12 weeks of cuts. The addition coming after the oil rigs had fallen by two-thirds over the past year to lows we hadn't seen in 2009 showed crude drilling picking up again after a 50% price rally since February. And one oil analyst said the rig count and crude prices have a direct relationship, for sure. And so Brent crude ended down 8 cents at $41.46 a barrel, but that came after it reached a high of $42.54. U.S. crude was down 31 cents after gaining a dollar earlier to a year high of $41.20. Over the past 2 months, prices rallied to reach above $40 after the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC, floated the idea of a production freeze. Will it happen? Well, who knows, because we've had some of these indications before the meetings take place. Nothing happens. But U.S. crude inventories hit a fifth straight week of record highs last week. The build of 1.3 million barrels, though, was less than half of expectations. But apparently, with better weather, we are seeing the driving activity picking up, and that is pushing gasoline prices higher. And the stocks of gasoline showed the stocks went up 6.4% over the past 4 weeks, from the same time a year ago. I spent 3 days in Washington this week. Well, Max Armstrong did too. We were there with a lot of other people for National Agriculture Day. For the 43rd year, a National Agriculture Day salute in Washington, D.C., and it's getting bigger and better every year. At the Salute to Agriculture banquet that was the climax for the day in the patio of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, representing the U.S. Department was Michael Skews. He is Assistant Secretary of Agriculture for Farm and Foreign Agricultural Service at USDA. And before the banquet started, I visited with Michael and asked him why this was an important day for him.
Well, I think the most important thing about today is the ability to communicate to our consumers about the importance of agriculture, the role that it plays in their lives. You know, less than 1% of our population today are farmers. So we're feeding the other 99% who are far removed from the farm. So today's a day to tell our story about what we do, what we go through, and the important role that agriculture plays in their lives and in the overall economy of this country.
And on this National Agriculture Day, we're asking for some understanding on biotechnology. Does the department have a stand on GMO labeling?
Most definitely. Look, we believe that our consumers do have a right to know, and it's all about the way that that is presented. We believe that there's a way that we can inform our consumers through the label, either through a 1-800 number or using the technology that exists today with a smartphone to read a label so that they can see what's actually in their products. But biotechnology products, as you well know, been around now for over 20 years. The science is safe science. All the studies have shown that biotechnology products are safe. It allows us to improve the overall environment. It allows us to help feed the world. And ultimately, biotechnology products are going to allow us to improve human health. So that's the message that we really need to get out there, is how important these products are for all of those reasons.
Are you as puzzled as I am about the war on science that seems to be taking place right now?
Very much so, and I don't understand why we're having the discussions that we're having. You know, the science is there. It's sound. Research has proven that these products are safe. We've asked other countries to base their decisions on trade based on sound science. We should be doing the same thing. The science says these products are safe. And again, not only are they safe, but these products are allowing us to use less herbicides, less pesticides, less water, ways that we can improve our environment. They're allowing us to develop products such as high-oleic oil that's going to improve the human health. The golden rice, which will allow us also to improve not only human health, but help the eyesight in hundreds of thousands of children. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons to embrace the science and look at the good that the science can do. Not only that, but the world population is growing, Orion. You know, 9.7 billion people by 2050. We're going to need to use the science to feed that growing world's population.
Michael Skews, who served as Secretary of Agriculture in Delaware before Tom Vilsack picked him to be an Assistant Secretary at USDA in charge of Farm and Foreign Agricultural Service. Now, the Secretary, Tom Vilsack, was not in attendance at the banquet or the day-long celebration. It was too long a commute for him because he was in Chile and Peru on a trade mission with about 34 other people representing commodity groups and representing agricultural industries. So Tom Vilsack didn't make it, but we certainly saw a lot of other people there. The encouraging thing to me about National Agriculture Day is not only the growth in interest and the opportunity to truly salute farmers and ranchers and their families for putting up with government, weather, markets, and the PETA animal welfare groups and all the other challenges that they have every day, but It's great to be able to set aside a day on Capitol Hill to say thank you to these people. The other area that encourages me a great deal is the attendance of young people for the day on Capitol Hill. We had representatives there from 4-H, from FFA. I think there were 48 state officers from all over the country with FFA that came in. Then there's the AFA. That's basically made up of college students who are preparing for a career in agriculture. They were well represented. And then the National Outstanding Young Farmers of America were there. Every year, the Outstanding Farmer Group selects four young farmers as the nation's outstanding young farmers. That happens in February, but the following year is when that group goes to Washington for National Agriculture Day. The four that were selected this year in Cincinnati will be participating in National Agriculture Day next year. And in addition to that salute on Capitol Hill, also I pay tribute and say thanks to a lot of communities across the country who held special events as well as on Capitol Hill to pay tribute to America's farmers and ranchers. Well, there's more to come, so stay with us when we continue on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need, today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Dale Durkos, AgriVisor. Welcome back, Sage.
Hey, it's always good to be up in town.
Well, as we're getting ready for the planting season, we're getting this barrage of intentions numbers. All of the private estimates are coming out ahead of the USDA numbers that'll be released on the 31st. And we'll have all these digested in a day or two, won't we?
Yeah, we probably will. You know, it's interesting. The few that I've seen so far have been really pretty close to what the USDA had projected at their outlook for them. And frankly, if we got numbers something like that, that really fits the whole acreage matrix, in my opinion anyway.
Do we tend to get surprises in the March intentions report, or is that pretty much a nailed-down number when it's released?
No, it's not a nailed-down number. It's really kind of wide open because at this point we're really kind of all second-guessing about what producers really are going to do this year, what kind of intentions and plans. And, you know, we don't have the broad-based surveys from some of these privates like the USDA will go out and do. So there will be some surprises within the numbers, I think.
Once that report comes out on the 31st, we really get to looking closely at weather, don't we? I mean, isn't that sort of the date by which we really get engaged in watching planting season weather?
You know, I think already we're starting to get engaged in weather at this point in time because of the weather we're having right now, which is unusually warm. I'd noticed in Illinois, we've already got some low 50 soil temps right now. So, you know, weather's already becoming a part of the mix. And then on top of that, we've got this ongoing debate. How fast does the El Nino fade and how fast does La Nina come, which has got everybody really kind of on the edge of their seat this year.
We have seen some grain go in the ground already. I think about 7 to 10 days ago, there was some corn being planted at Pike County, Illinois. I saw a report of some soybeans in the southern part of the state. Yeah, soybeans. There was a plot that went in.
There was also a cornfield south of Springfield, Illinois, that went in the ground, I noticed this week as well. So we've got a few things going on. I think these are some of these big mega farmers that really are under the gun to get things in the ground. Most of your mainstream farmers, I think, are going to be sitting here waiting for that early plant date on their crop insurance before they really start to roll stuff into the ground.
The big mega farmers really under the gun, I believe was the line you used. They really are under the gun, aren't they? I mean, we're hearing a lot of reports about some of these very high cash rental rates they paid and the angst that they're going through now.
Yeah. You know, and when you go back and you look at where we're at non-land costs on corn in the state of Illinois versus what your crop insurance guarantee is, even at an 85%, we're not really doing much more than covering my cost of putting a crop in and taking it out. So there's a lot of things that are in this mix financially that's really going to determine a lot of what we see on the planting report and also the one we get in June.
Does that then also suggest that we're not going to see much of an acreage shift taking place, even if the market were to respond a little bit, that we're pretty well set on, in the minds of the producers, they're pretty well set on what they're going to put in this spring?
You know, I think right now the producer's got his plans set, and he's going to follow through on those plans unless something huge happens, and I don't see that in the mix necessarily. You know, weather and planting conditions and the timeliness of planting will be the big thing that will cause any acreage shift. So for the individual, what he's got in the plans right now is probably where he's going to go.
We've had a reminder in recent days that, yes, this market does respond to gyrations in the dollar. If the dollar eases back a little bit, the grain market certainly notes that.
You know, I think there's another bigger issue going on. If you look back at some of the broad commodity indices, and then if you look at crude oil, there's really a good argument to be made right now that the lows we put in commodity indices, the lows we put in crude oil to back in January, probably are going to stand up as three-year lows because we have a low every 3 years in that. So that really kind of paints a picture forward here that, you know, something probably is going to break to give us some higher prices along the way. The dollar is probably a part of that at this point, too, and especially with the Fed not going to move on interest rates right away.
They signaled this week that, in fact, they're going to pretty well slow down this process of raising rates.
It is, and it's because of economic things happening here in the U.S., and they also have to be kind of careful about how that fits the competitiveness of the dollar worldwide, because they really don't want the dollar to go up. They'd prefer the dollar to go down because that'll tend to spark inflation here in the U.S., and that's really what they're trying to get rolling.
And that whole commodity mix, we've noted that gold has actually come to life a bit there. That, again, fits the profile of what you're talking about, commodity recovery.
Yeah, it really does. And even if you look at some of the specific commodities that your listeners are interested in, corn and soybeans and wheat, you know, there's real arguments to be made there that we're passing some pretty crucial lows at this particular point in time. And so looking ahead the next few months, I think there's going to be some higher prices. And I think that 350 corn, 450 wheat, 850 bean base that we've had here over the last few months is probably going to hold up.
As they are busy planting, these growers need to be very astute marketers at the same time and watch for any activity.
Yeah, they really do. You have to keep on top of it, and you always have to be planning and looking ahead. But the one thing I've kind of counseled producers here all winter long is patience. Don't get too nervous. Don't get anxious. You could see these cyclic lows that we're starting to set up and line up. And so it suggests we're going to have some better opportunities. We're not going back to $6, $7, $8 corn. Don't get me wrong. But I think we're going to see higher prices than what's prevailing now.
And that weather scenario that you talked about could create some interest, especially as we get on into those critical days of summer.
Oh, yeah. You know, and that's going to be the big thing. It's going to really tie into how much to the upside can we really get prices to move here as we go across the next number of months. And you know, it's a who knows at this particular point. But when I look at some of the technical attributes in the markets, I can build a case easily from the technical side of it. We're going to see a 450 corn or maybe something close to a $10 bean.
There are those reality checks now and then, like the talk of importing Argentine wheat into the southeast United States. The economics, I guess, suggest that it could work, huh?
Well, a lot of that has to do with the fact that we're talking about importing feed wheat. That's what's coming in. And if you look at where our corn crop was last year, we were shorter in the eastern part of the Corn Belt. So to get corn clear down to the southeast, I got to pull out of the western Corn Belt. And it's really this transportation cost that really is creating that opportunity down there.
They didn't have very good feed grain crop in that part of the world either, did they?
No, they didn't. You know, and so and they tend to be feed deficit as it is because of the pork and the poultry that are raised down in the south and the southeast. And it's a whole lot easier, a whole lot cheaper to load a boat in Argentina and bring it up water and load it in Wilmington than to try to rail from Iowa, especially down through the Smoky Mountains and get it down into North Carolina. And for a lot of people who aren't familiar, we think about railroads straight shot down to New Orleans. Going into the southeast is not so easy.
Now, routinely, there is feed grain movement from the eastern corn belt down into that area. Quite often, you'll see a lot of corn moving from the area of Ohio and southern Indiana down into the chicken and hog country. But as you point out, that was a deficit area from 2015.
Yeah, it was. You know, and normally we do ship a lot of corn out of, let's say, eastern Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, as you mentioned, and we tend to push it down into the southeast in a lot of 3 and 10 and 20 car units. But as we're sitting here at this point in time where you have to pull it so far, and we don't have the corn in the eastern part of the Corn Belt to move down there because some of it's gone to export because of the river competition, some of it stays for ethanol, you know. So we just don't have the supply that we normally do.
You mentioned the fact that there's no reason to get extremely bullish about the grain market, that we're not going to see those dramatically higher prices. Is there anything out there that looms as a big negative that could really temper the enthusiasm, you know, that we might have coming along this spring?
Good weather and big crops. No doubt about it. You know, I mean, when we're sitting here going into the mix with a 2 billion or close to a 2 billion corn carry-in, when we're going to be going into the new crop bean construction with a carry-in that's going to be give or take 450 million, close to a billion of wheat. You know, if we have another good crop on top of these, it creates a real weight that the market's going to have to carry. So it does say everything is not all rosy necessarily. And on the flip side, if we're going to get those higher prices, it's probably because of weather. So you've got to plan for that contingency too.
Always good to talk to you, Dale. Thanks for coming in to darken the door of our studio. You brighten the day when you darken our door. How's that?
Hey, that works for works for me.
Dale Durkles, AgriVisor.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
One of the outstanding young farmers in attendance this year had the opportunity to address those who attended the Mix and Mingle Luncheon in the Dirksen Senate Office Building on Capitol Hill. Chad Garoni is a farmer in California, and when you hear California, you have to talk about the drought. And so when I talked to Chad, my first question was, talk to me about the drought in California.
We're looking for an El Nino pattern this year, and it just hasn't hit yet. Northern California, we have seen quite a bit more rain, and a lot of the reservoirs are filling back up, and the snowpack looks good. However, where we are, we're at the southern end of the San Joaquin Valley. We normally get about 5.5 inches of rain a year, and I think right now we're at about 2.5. So we're off quite a bit, and a lot of the storms are just shifting a little bit north of us. However, where we need it the most is in the mountains, up in for the snowpack, and we are building that up. So hopefully it'll continue throughout the spring, and we'll be able to alleviate some of this drought conditions we've been facing in the last 4 years.
So what crops are you producing that depend a great deal on water?
Well, pretty much all of them, but we are almond producers, and I also produce alfalfa, corn, and wheat in the forms of silage for dairies, and then a vast array of vegetable crops, and we have Angus beef cattle as well.
Quite an array of commodities produced on that farm near Bakersfield, California, and our thanks to Chad Garoni, and let's hope that some of those storms with rainfall move a little farther south in California so that he gets some help. Well, this afternoon after the market closed, the monthly cattle on feed report was issued, but before that happened, cattle futures traded lower at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. As a matter of fact, only a couple of hog contracts traded higher for the day. But let's look at the cattle on feed numbers. Cattle and calves on feed in the U.S. totaled 10.8 million head on the first day of March. That's 1% more than March 1st a year ago. but it's the placement area, the number of cattle placed on feed that traders were really looking at, and the average estimate before the report, an increase of 8%. The number came in even larger than that. Number of cattle placed on feed in February up 10% from a year ago. Marketing's up 5% from a year ago. So as we take a look at the market and where we'll start trading on Monday, lean hogs, the April contract, ended the day at $71.37 a hundredweight after gaining 7 cents today. But April live cattle, $139.35 on Monday is where we'll start after losing $1.80 today. And the June contract dropped $2.02. The April feeder cattle contract will start trade Monday at $161.20 after dropping $3.97 today. And May cattle were down the $4.50 limit. Tough ending to the cattle market. What about the grain market? Where do we start? Well, surprisingly, after a tough week, the May wheat futures moved higher. So Monday, we'll start at $4.63 a bushel after gaining 1.5 cents today. The rest of the market, it's a red screen. The May corn contract will start Monday, $3.67 a bushel. And it dropped 1.75 cents today, as did the new crop December corn, down 1.75 at 385.5. May soybeans will start trade Monday at 897.5 after dropping 0.75 cents today. Well, this week the Senate voted against biotechnology, I guess. They did not come up with enough votes to pass the bipartisan labeling bill for food, meaning GMO, just didn't make it through. Needed 60 votes to pass, and they got only 49 in favor of that vote. And today we got word that General Mills is going to start labeling all of its GMO products in this country. We'll talk more about that next week. But that's our time, and as always, we appreciate your company. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.